Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome to Podvincible, a podcast about Invincible. I am Alex, and we are here backstage at WonderCon with a very special guest, the executive producer, co-showrunner of Invincible, Simon Rasiopa.
You got it right, Rasiopa. Yeah.
Rasiopa.
Woo. Perfect.
All right.
Perfect.
I felt like a little nervous right about Chester on the same, but we got
me
it.
Too. Don't worry. It's okay.
Excellent.
We'll get through this together.
So very excited to chat with you, and thanks so much for taking the time during a very busy con. We are pre the Invincible panel that's going to be happening here, which is very cool. But I also want to give a spoiler warning up front. I assume most people listening to this probably already have seen season 3. If not,
they should go watch it. They should pause this, go watch it, and then
exactly.
come back.
So let's actually jump to right at the end, because I think that really brought home a lot of the themes of the season. We get a line straight out of the comic book where Invincible says he's not going to hesitate to kill next time. What was your take on that? Because obviously that is, again, straight from the comic, but like it's very rare, if at all, for superhero media, for superhero literature, anything like that. So I was curious to hear what went into that moment, and I have a follow-up, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we always try to have not even upfront, but we have a theme for most of our seasons, right? So season one was about Mark wanting to become his father. You know, that's how the season started. That was, you know, his journey along the way was wanting to be like his dad, wanting to be a hero like his dad. And then obviously at the end, he realizes like, oh no, that's not what I want to do. My dad is not who I thought he was. Season two was Mark being terrified that he was becoming his dad, right? Like, what if I become my father? What if these terrible traits, what if they're inherited? What if I, you know, the Viltrumite side of me is too strong to resist and I become a terrible person. Season three is about him finding his own way and trying to decide, like, you know, what does it mean to be a hero on my own terms? And initially, you know, it's one of those terms is I don't kill. I just don't do that. That's what my dad did. That's a terrible thing. And along the way, Mark's, we test that belief of Mark's up to the point of where, you know, eventually at the end, he changes his mind and comes down on a stance on that. And is that going to be his stance for the rest of the season? I'm sorry, the rest of the series, if we make more? Not necessarily. Maybe not. So, but yeah, that's kind of... So it was an important thing, but it's a character development journey that we've been with Mark on since, you know, episode one.
Well, but at the same time, this is going to be my follow-up portion, is underneath that moment, very different for the comic book, which you may be aware does not have music, there's a musical sting that happens, and it felt a little ominous to
right.
me. Why was that important to Eclipse?
Well, I mean, isn't it kind of like he's saying he's willing to kill?
Yeah.
I mean, like, when is that? I mean, we're not trying to give an answer about these things. We're trying to raise a question. And, you know, one of the questions we raise, and I think the books do this too, is like, is it morally or ethically okay for a hero to kill if that's going to save lives in the future? You know, and so that's one of the things that we're putting up to be tested, I think, going forwards. We're not going to give you an answer about that, but that's something that we're positing that question. Is that okay? And Mark is taking a position on that. And, you know, the musical cue is maybe showing, you know, a feeling about like that this is something that's going to return in the future, this question.
Something we talk about on the podcast a lot, particularly with this season, is it felt like Mark was dealing in absolutes. Like, I will never kill under any circumstances. You kept throwing things at him where it was like, you got to kill, you got to kill, you got to kill. Until now he comes around to the opposite direction, and he's not like, I will kill all the time.
Right.
But again, he's very definitive about this stuff. So I think you're kind of talking about this anyway, but is part of what you're doing sort of breaking down Mark from that black and white view of the world?
I think so. I mean, I'm sure you remember being, you know, a 20-year-old or a teenager. Like, that's kind of...
I'm 21, just to be
clear. Well, you look amazing.
Terrible.
You know, I remember being that age, and I don't know, I'm sure there's better people than me, but I remember feeling more dogmatic about the world, about thinking like there were more very obvious rights and wrongs in the world, you know. And not that I don't believe that that still exists, but I certainly see the world in a much more shaded kind of way now. And I think Mark is like 20, 21 years old, right? So his world is, I think, for me anyway, a much more black and white world. And that's what we're putting under the microscope. That's what we're testing through season three, you know, is forcing him to be like, is it black and white? Are these questions absolute, you know, or are there shades of gray in between?
I mean, that ties into one of my absolute favorite animation choices you made during the season. During the montage where Eve and Mark are going on the first date, was the first time I noticed you had aged up the animation models for them, which I don't think I've ever really seen on a show before. Again, like, what led to that choice, and how are you doing that? How are you slowly aging them up from the visual perspective?
Every season we do a sort of a relook at the models. And we have an incredible art team, incredible directors on our show who sort of like really dig into that. I think the joke, I think it actually came from Corey at one point, Corey Walker, who was joking about how like animated characters always wear the same clothes, yeah, and how we didn't want to do that. We wanted to have as many costume changes as possible. So at the very least, like every season we reevaluate what our characters look like, what they're wearing, and sort of approach it from that kind of point of view.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of the stuff that happened at the end of the season. I'm sure you've talked about this a lot, but it was very fun seeing that mid-credits scene with Damian Darkblood, mm-hmm, which, if I recall, is based on a storyline that Robert Kirkman never got to do in the comics.
Yes.
So what is that like for you going into, I mean, obviously you have Robert working hand in hand with you,
yes,
but going into this uncharted territory?
I mean, it's amazing. I was a fan of the books before I came on the show, started to do the show with Robert. So I was, you know, I come in as someone who loves the books and loved reading them and stuff. So to find out that there's a lost issue, so to speak, like that was, I mean, I've been privy to a couple things, you know, Robert's like, oh, you know, this part, I was always meant to expand it. And some of the stuff we've done on the show where he had an idea for something, I'm like, this is great. We could make more of an episode out of this. Like we could expand that on the show. But this is like a lost issue, I guess you could kind of call it. So to get a fully, you know, original new thing from Kirkman that was something he wanted to do in the books and now we get to in the show is incredible. So yeah, I'm delighted by it.
There in the scene, Damian Darkblood says he is the most evil person, mm-hmm, I've ever encountered.
Mm-hmm.
Who is he?
Oh my God, that's a great question. You're just going to have to wait and find out.
My theory,
I will say we will answer that question, yeah, but I will not answer that question.
Here, I'm going to watch your face. My theory is Cecil.
I mean, Cecil evil? No. I don't know. He's the world's greatest, right, interest at heart. He has a big heart, Cecil.
All right. Here's something that wasn't in the finale and wasn't in most of the season was Omni-Man.
Yes.
You had a brief, I mean, you had a couple of things, but there was the,
yes,
big thing with him and Alan the Alien. How, J.K. Simmons is such a crucial, mm-hmm, part of the show, and particularly I felt it watching it, missing him and the relationship between Oliver and Mark, which obviously was fleshing out,
yes,
on its own. How tricky does it make it for you in the writer's room putting him on the side for that many episodes?
I mean, look, I love what J.K. brings to the show is incredible. Same with Seth, obviously, because, you know, I kind of think of the two of them together because they're in prison. Not in the real world, in the show.
Oh. They're in prison?
Well, they might be.
Okay.
Well, they
big
were, you know,
revelation
they were,
for the podcast.
They were. I would love to, you know, we want to put them in the show as much as possible, but also, you know, sometimes you're building up to something. So maybe we're going to see a lot more of them in the future together.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm bouncing all over the place,
yeah,
here, but talking about the schedule, I know,
yeah,
you talk about that incessantly to the point where I feel bad bringing it up, but what have you learned? Because it does feel like you are back on track with the potential, mm-hmm, year release at this point. So what lessons have you learned from those hiccups, if we can call them?
The lesson we learned was do not do a mid-season break.
Right.
That was, we learned that over and over and over again very, very strongly. No, I mean, look, the crew of the show is hundreds deep. They're incredible artists. Some things you can kind of rush and you can, you know, speed up, and some things you can't. And we want to make sure that the show is quality when it comes out. And sometimes that takes longer than you think it's going to take. I have another friend of mine who's like, you know, a bad show is forever, but a late show is only late once, you know? And it's like, no one's in the future is going to remember if a show is like a week late, but they're going to remember if it's bad. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't a schedule that we have to try and stick to. But it's more important for us that the show be great than it is making sure it's that, you know, it comes out on exactly a specific week. And thankfully, our partners sort of feel the same way.
Yeah. What is something like adding the Adam Eve special or adding material like the David Darkblood thing? What does that do to the schedule?
I mean, everything you add to the show, there's a cost. Like when you're making a show, like ultimately, at the end of the day, you have X number of resources, and those resources are generally time and money, and you choose where to allocate those as you make the show. So if you want to do a new special, then yes, that's going to slow down something else. You know, I mean, we can stack things in certain ways. We have really great producers on our show who are super talented and are knowledgeable about how to get things done as efficiently as possible. But at the end of the day, there's, you know, this much work that needs to be done by this many people. It's going to take this many weeks.
Yeah. This is getting very wonky, but I'm always very curious about this sort of thing. I know it usually takes, would you say, like a year and a half to 2 years to put together a season of an animated series. So you kind of have to know you're getting the next season if you want to start working on it. Otherwise, you end up on that delay. So
yes.
Season four, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have all the voices recorded. I think they put that out on social media.
Yep.
And we don't have a premiere date for that, but they were jokingly probably 2026.
Yes.
I know there hasn't been an official announcement about season five, but when do you need to know about that to make sure that is on pace?
You know what? That's a good question. I would have to like check our schedule to give you a quick answer about that. You know, hopefully, you know, as soon as they want to give it to us, as soon as, you know, we don't have anything to announce, unfortunately, about season five right now. I hope we get to do a season five and beyond. Right now, we're really focused. I mean, three's out, which is great. Now we're just focused on getting four done and finished and at the highest level of quality that we can.
Well, let me take a step back. Again, this is very wonky, but I'm always very curious about this stuff. Since you can't talk about season five, let's talk about season three and four.
Sure.
So at what stage during season three did you need to know about season four and start working on it?
Oh, my God. That's it. Again, I'm trying to think back. I don't remember the exact time. We were very lucky that Amazon is such a good partner, and they sort of like... There's also things, and I'm not saying we do this, but certain shows, like you can sometimes just start the scripts early, right? You can start the scripts early in anticipation, hopefully, of a green light for a future season. So, networks and studios can do that kind of a thing. So I don't remember the exact date when we started four, but it would have been back like at some point during three.
Okay. But there's an overlap there. Basically.
Yes. Yeah. There was a point where, you know, we were working on, you know, two and three together, three and four together, you know, and then hopefully, you know, future seasons.
Yeah. All right. Let's get off the wacky stuff and talk about things that other people are potentially interested in. You killed off Rex this season, Jason Mantzoukas. I know, sad. Obviously.
I feel Kirkman killed off Rex. We just like showed
you. Not your fault. You really did a great job of building up the Mantzoukas. Again, something that we talked about a lot, just leaning into him as a comedian, as a voice, fleshing him out. We were talking about adding things. So I imagine part of that this season, building up his relationship with Shrinking Ray, was in anticipation of the eventual losing him to, you know, get as much as, what's it, the juice from the lemon squeeze?
Whatever. Maybe. I mean, I would hesitate to say we weren't building him up just to tear him down.
Yeah.
We really weren't. You know, from season one, we sort of knew his character arc, obviously, because we had the books. We knew where he's going. I just wanted to enhance that, you know, and the writers on the show and Robert, too. We just wanted to make him a real character as much as we could and just sort of like build him up a bit more, you know, from the books, because Jason's incredible and we wanted to give him some more time on screen. And it just felt like this was a natural organic progression from the situation. Like he and Ray almost getting killed together. They're like blood brothers now, but maybe more than that. Maybe, you know, when people go through a traumatic experience, it brings them together. And that just sort of felt like an organic thing that we could explore in the show and it was working. And we just loved that. But like he was always going to meet his end in season three, because that's where he does in the books. We didn't do it to be cruel. Let me put it that way. We did it because we thought this was an interesting exploration of the character. And then, unfortunately, it came to an end for him.
Well, just on the acting perspective, Jason Mantzoukas is so good on the show. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine you really like working with him. Is there a possibility of him coming back in some form?
I would hope so. I would love it. Like, Jason's incredible. So that's his final death scene. I think we did ADR on that, where we sort of go back after we have the animation, we re-record the voices again and extra sounds. Because sometimes, you know, we record the actors early on in the process, and then we do animation stuff. And sometimes then we're like, oh, the characters are actually further apart than we thought they were going to be when we recorded them. So we need to go back in and get that line with more projection. Or, you know, the blocking of the scene has changed somewhat. Or we're just like, you know what, that line, it worked great in the booth, but now it feels like it needs to be a little bit more, you know, tucked under or to themselves. So we will re-record audio for the show. So that's a sequence where we had Rex's death sequence where Jason was so passionate. Like, we probably spent, I'm going to say, 2 hours conservatively just doing his final scene up in the tower there over and over and over again until we were all, like, just happy with it. And Jason was just like, he was like, no, I can do it better. I can do it better. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. We just kept on going through that to get all the little sounds. So, like, if you go through that, if you really listen, like, there's lots of little sounds of him just like in pain and agony when he gets choked, when he like is fighting back against, you know, one of the Invincibles. Like, that was a lot of work and a lot of effort, and he just killed it. So I just want to say that we spent a lot of time on that, and Jason's incredible.
If Rudy grows up, mm-hmm. does he lose Ross Marquand's voice and get Jason Mantzoukas' voice?
That is an excellent question.
Ooh, okay. All right. Let's talk about Cogquest. Again, mm-hmm. I know this is something you talked about a lot, but as a Walking Dead fan, it mm-hmm. was a thrill to get a little justice for Glenn going on
yes.
here
yes.
in this. This is something that came from our Discord, actually. People were a little bummed that neither Cogquest nor Mark picked up a bat at any point. Did you talk about that?
We did not talk about that. I mean, there's a limit to the joke, right? Sure. Like, how far you go. I mean, we could have had him pick up a big piece of rebar or something, maybe from one of the collapsed buildings, and just, like, slap it against his palm. No, I mean, look, we looked at, you know, we were talking about a number of different actors for Cogquest at one point, and then, you know, JDM's name came up, and we just started talking about that a bit more, and it made us smile. And then also, he is an incredible actor, and I think you see, you know, there's a short monologue that he does in that episode that I just think is chilling and incredible and amazing. And for him, like, you know, talk about a bat, like, he knocked it out of the park with that. So we were just so delighted when he came in and did that kind of work for us. Yeah, he's great.
Were they able to get in the booth together at all, Steven Yeun and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, or were they separate?
In that case, they were separate. Okay. But it's something we try to do. It's difficult with our actor schedules because, you know, we have a great cast. We have a large cast, and often they're also, you know, on another show or doing something else. So we try to work around their schedule. So we do try to do that. Often, sometimes we do play them. If one of the actors has been in first, we can play them the audio so they can hear the other side of the conversation they're having and react to that, which is great. But if you're the first actor in a scene, generally you're just going in and just doing your part, and you have to trust, you know, the room and our great voice director, you know, myself and Rob, that we're guiding you in the way that we think the scene needs to go. And then we bring the other actor and they can hear the first actor, and then they can respond to that.
I was reading an EW, and I don't know how much this was Robert, you know, sort of doing his regular joking thing or not, but he was saying you guys announced Jonathan Banks to make people think Jonathan Banks was playing Cogquest so you could hide Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
I mean, we announced Jonathan Banks and didn't say who he was playing. Okay. People assumed he was playing Cogquest, and that's on them. That's not on us.
Yeah, it was on the fan wiki.
Yeah.
When I was doing some writing about the show, I was like, that's not right. I know that's not right because I've seen the episodes. But
yes. Yeah, it was. I mean, look, we, like, Robert and I both, we are very strong believers that too many things get spoiled mm-hmm. online in trailers and teasers, in interviews and in press. You have to do some of that to promote the show, but we do want to hide some things. Just, and again, it's out of a sense of, like, we want you to be delighted and surprised and shocked maybe when something happens. And if that's all shown up front, I think it diminishes the show a little bit, not just our show, but any show. So part of that is casting. We want you to be surprised when you hear an actor playing playing a role. So that's why we hold things back sometimes.
Yeah. Talking about the Invincible War and all the cameos there, we got Jonathan Banks as Britt. We also saw Astounding Wolfman, Tech Jacket, a bunch of other characters from Kirkman books.
The Kirkmanverse, sure.
Sure, why not? We didn't see Witchblade or Spawn or anything like that. I assume those were just kind of out, right?
I mean, oh my God, you could talk for probably hours about about how rights and, you know, options and, like, IP are handled today. And I think in comic books, certainly when Robert was writing Invincible, those issues, it was a lot easier to just call someone up. Like, he's friends with everybody, right? He knows, you know, McFarlane and everybody and just be like, hey, man, can I do a guest with your character? And people would just say yes, and we just happen. You could do that kind of stuff. TV is like way different, certainly now, obviously. So it's not that we wouldn't want something like that to happen. I think we'd be super open to it. But sometimes the logistics and the IP rules about that are just impossible because, a comic creator might have already licensed that character off to another show or even the rights are just like locked away in some other fashion. So it just makes those kind of crossovers really, really not impossible, but very, very difficult. Whereas Kirkman, Robert owns all of his own material. In some cases, he has might have restrictions on even those stuff. But most of it is just it's all in house, so he can just be like, yeah, let's put Wolfman in it. Why not? So which is fantastic.
Once that is in the mix, are you able to bring those characters back some more potentially?
Potentially, yes. We probably could do that. Yes, if we did it once, we probably could do it again.
I wanted to ask you about a character that captured the imagination of the internet and has gone too soon. Who is Business Baby?
Oh, Business Baby. But is Business Baby gone?
Well, that was going to be a question. R.I.P. Business Baby, or is he? No,
I think Business Baby, I don't think he's dead.
Oh.
I think Business Baby maybe is okay.
All right.
He's not just a baby. He's a business baby. He's tougher than he looks.
Business doesn't stop.
No.
One voice that I was very excited about was Doug Bradley as the technicians.
Yes.
I love that you leaned into that in the last episode. I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, we have such delicious delights before you, something like that. What led to that casting decision? But it was just looking at him and being like, well, that's a Cenobite.
I mean, this was Robert's dream. And I was, as a Hellraiser fan, I'm only too delighted to be like, yes, let's do that. So this is a purely a Robert thing. I mean, a lot of the characters, he's written the book for so long. He has ideas in his head of how they would sound, which is great. So he comes in, he's like, oh, I always thought, this actor could play this role. Or in my head, this guy sounded like this. And we try to do that as much as we can. So in this case, he was like, technicians, I always thought kind of like Doug Bradley would be great. And we're like, that's incredible. Yes, absolutely. Let's do it. And we were lucky enough that he said yes, and we got to do it. And he's fantastic in the role and was a delight to work with.
Well, who's yours then? Who is your Doug Bradley that you're able to cast on the show?
Oh, that's a really good question. Gillian was one of my favorites from season one. I mean, I saw her in Community and, some other things, and I just thought she would be perfect for Adam Eve. So getting her back in season one was a delight. And also Sandra. I mean, Sandra, she's a fellow Canadian, which I love, is just, she makes us cry in the booth. Like, we'll be listening to her perform and just like, if she's doing a sad scene and we're like, I'll look over and like Robert will be like, I'm not crying. Are you crying? So she's incredible. So getting her on board was fantastic. And that was a dream come true.
Yeah. Mentioning Adam Eve is a good reason to talk about the relationships on the show. Mm-hmm. Everybody is so mature and nice to each other. Like everything that went on with Eve and Amber was pretty cool with everything. Was there any thought to make it more like teen drama and up at all? Or is that just not the source material?
I mean, a little. I mean, we want to make it interesting, but I mean, I would say that wasn't the point of those scenes, right? Like, we're not a teen drama. Not that we don't have elements of that in the show, but it just felt like that's not what those moments or those episodes were about. So why pull on those threads if we weren't going to tell that story, if we weren't going to do something with that?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Something that we also talk about the podcast on a bunch, we have a little bit of a disagreement about, is the music choices. Mm-hmm. You do something very atypical with the show, which is you often play the entire song, like, instead of a snippet of a song or something like that.
Yeah.
Why is that important to you sonically?
Honestly, that's really dictated by the visuals in a lot of cases. Like, if we play the whole song, it's because We have an area that we need that we think the song will work really well over, and visually it's long. There's lots of places where we use fewer amounts of the song. We have great music editors, so sometimes the song has been edited that you may not know that. You'd have to go back and listen to the original. We'll take the ending, sort of move that sooner. If like the song's 3 minutes, but we really only need 2 minutes of it, but we want it to wrap up the same way, we have great music editors who will go in and edit that song and make it fit our visuals, to make that work. So sometimes we use the whole song in a couple of cases, but lots of times, I think if you go back and you look, we only use portions of the songs.
Yeah. This is just while I was looking through notes, I forgot to ask you this when we were talking about Conquest. He does the face train move from season one.
Yes.
Is that just something Viltrumites do?
I mean, they like to push people's faces through things. I mean, I guess. I mean, he's trying to obviously, like, you know, shock Mark and show him, you know, punish him for you know, not taking over Earth, for, like, respecting people, I guess. It's, you know, it's a interesting, shocking visual thing. I don't think Conquest doesn't know about the train scene, so Conquest is just being
He doesn't know he's doing a callback.
No, he's not doing, he's doing a Nolan. No, Conquest is just being Conquest. He's just conquesting.
Talking about another Viltrumite and sort of a controversial thing coming up, I had talked to Robert about this last season when Anissa was introduced, and we have potentially, I'm skirting around spoilers here for anybody who hasn't read the books, but there's a pretty controversial thing that happens with her and Mark. Is that something you guys have started to talk around more as you're getting closer to that moment?
I mean, we've talked about it. The nice thing, again, about having with the books, Robert, is we kind of know what's coming up. And, like, obviously, you know, we make changes. We expand some things. We expand some characters, some stuff we maybe minimize. So it's definitely being part of the conversation. We talk about all elements of the books coming up. And it's nice to know that we're building to something or something is happening. So, yeah, so we've talked about that moment, if that's what you're asking.
I'm skirting because I know you probably don't want to talk about it. Specifically, more things you probably don't want to talk about specifically. We're going about 20-ish issues per season. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have the Damian Darkblood thing next season, so that'll probably change it a little bit. But if we're going by the next 20 issues of the book, we got the Viltrumite War.
Yes.
Is that coming up in season four?
I can't spoil with this. We just talked about this.
I know.
You don't want to see teasers and trailers and things up front. I mean, look, if you've read the books, you know the general shape of what's coming. If you haven't read the books, read the books. But we change things up. We know we move things around. We do still want to surprise and delight you. You know, I can't tell you what's happening in season four until you watch it.
Yeah, here's another thing that you can't tell me. They did say that the voice of Thrag has been cast.
He absolutely has. Yes.
And I assume since you've recorded the voices, you've heard whoever it is.
Yes.
Since you're not going to tell me who it is,
I'm not going to tell you who it is.
Okay. No. How is it? How are you feeling about the Thrag voice?
I think it's incredible, and I think you. I can't wait. I wish I could have you hear it, see it, listen to it. But you will have to wait for that. But he is wonderful and fantastic. And we are very, very, very happy with our casting.
When, I know we're right before a panel, so maybe the answer is like half an hour from now, but when can we expect some more news about Invincible season?
Season three just ended.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, this is great. I love it. I mean, I think, you know, stuff will trickle out, but I mean, like, you know, we finished the season now, so we'll probably go quiet for a little bit. I mean, I think online they you know, the Invincible accounts will put out things along the way, and then at some point there'll be time, you know, we'll have more work done and we'll come out, you know, I'm sure we're going to do another trailer and things like that at some point, and there'll be some more news, but honestly, like, I don't actually know when we will surface again, but it will be at some point, you know, not too far.
Just to wrap up here then, in terms of something you can talk about, looking back on the whole of season three, compared to where you were with season one, season two, the special, what do you think progressed? What's sort of your big takeaway as a creator from putting together the season?
I mean, I hope every season is getting better, both from, like, storytelling, you know, a writing point of view, directing, you know, an action point of view. We try to improve every season. So I hope people feel that. I mean, like, it's okay. Like, obviously, nothing's linear, but we try to make the show better every season. For me, personally, I love writing the characters more and more every single season because we have more, they have more history, more backstory to talk about, more moments that happened previously that are affecting them in this scene today. So, like, you know, writing Eve in 307 or 306 is, she's a slightly different person than she was in 102, you know, and it's nice to be able to draw now on that history of her character to make her a more complex, more interesting person, and not just Eve, obviously, but our entire cast. So that's a delight for me. It's getting more and more enjoyable to write all of these characters every season.
Yeah. And last thing before I let you go, when are we going to get more The Boys Diabolical?
Oh, man. Write Amazon. Tell them you want some more. I would love to do some more. Yeah. Thank you for that. That show was a delight. I loved making that show. We had such a great team on that, like great writers, great directors, fantastic artists. It was a bear getting it done during pandemic and on such a tight timeline, but I would love to do more about that. Unfortunately, nothing to announce on that, but it would be great. Yeah. Write everybody. Write Amazon if you want more. Tell them you want more.
I'll do it as soon as I get off. I'm going to write the letter.
I appreciate that.
Awesome. Simon, thank you so much for taking the time. Congrats on the season and looking forward to season four whenever it is.
Perfect. Thank you, Alex. So great to meet you.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty, self-doubt, stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live laugh lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.